Blog Talk Radio.
Dallas, Texas, on Sunday, August the 2nd. As we like to do on Sundays, we'll be chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. A lot to get into this week, as we normally have a lot of information to get into. President Obama and President Bush attended the John Lewis funeral, the late representative's funeral, and I thought we saw an amazing contrast between these two men. George W. Bush, lots of class. President Obama, lots of bitterness, and we'll talk a little bit about that. Protesting has now become, the way of life. Portland is not doing very well, but there's also a big debate about whether there's politics in the protest, because the virus apparently only attacks people who go to church or want to go to baseball games. Apparently, it doesn't attack people who are protesting, and this week there was a big debate with Dr. Fauci about that. President Trump had a tweet this week that created a lot of controversy. I thought it was a stupid tweet, with all due respect to the president, but I thought he was right about the topic of vote fraud and mail-in votes. So he was right, but he just didn't say it the right way. There's all kinds of polling data out there if you want to pretty much conclude whatever you want to conclude, and some polls are showing this race getting closer. Others are showing crazy information. The police union is supporting President Trump. They're not very happy with the Democrats. We'll talk a little bit about American City, Chicago, Portland, and lots to get into. So let me say hello to our friend Bill Katz. Bill, the weather is beautiful here, if you don't mind. 96 degrees, Bill.
Well, that's a little too hot for me. It's actually quite nice here, but we expect the tropical storm, whose name nobody can pronounce, to come up the Atlantic coast at the beginning of the week, which is tomorrow, and it should arrive here like Tuesday night. By that time, it will be considerably weakened, and all those Eveready and Duracell batteries that people are buying will probably be useless.
Right.
You know, one of the interesting things about bad weather is that it's very good for business, for certain businesses. And, in the television industry, a storm is a big profit thing, because people tune to their TVs more and more to get weather reports. And, of course, the commercials are more expensive for the sponsor when that happens. They have a larger audience, and they make a lot of money. So, and we've had many of these cases. I think we talked about this one time during one winter, where we are told that the end of the world is about, we are about to be hit by a hurricane with 800-mile-an-hour winds. Every building will be torn down. There will be nobody left. But if you buy Duracell batteries for your flashlight, you might very well make it. And you see people lined up in the supermarkets to get the last of the batteries, and then you get two ounces of rain, enough to fill an eyedropper. And this would happen time and time again. You just had to believe that maybe they were giving us the worst-case scenario, because the worst-case scenario was the one that brought in the money. I don't really take the report seriously when it's a horrible report. Now, the report that we're getting now seems to be pretty straightforward, that it'll come up the coast, it'll dump a lot of rain, but it won't be a really big storm. So I'll live with that.
Yeah, they downgraded it
yes,
to whatever that means. It's not going to be whatever category. It's going to be a lower category. So
it's not going to be a hurricane. It'll be a tropical storm.
Right, a tropical storm.
Yes.
I'm not sure that means anything if you're in the middle of a storm, but technically, I guess that is the difference. A tropical storm and a hurricane.
It has to do with the strength of the strongest winds. I think to be a Category 1 hurricane, it has to be 75 miles an hour. And then if you get up into 2 and 3, you're really getting into dangerous stuff. But
right.
a tropical storm is below that. However, a tropical storm can still pack tremendous flooding, you know,
right.
a lot of water. So we'll see. They say, you know, stock up, go to buy the sponsor's product, have 7 days of food. Well, I'm usually content with 7 hours, you know. And so we're in good shape.
Yes. No, I think normally these things, people over-prepare, but I guess, you know, I don't live in that area, so it's easy for me to say, but I know in the Houston area, they've gotten a tremendous amount of rain over the last week or so, and, you know, they don't have floods, but they've had a lot of rain. Bill, let's begin with the John Lewis funeral. And, you know, John Lewis obviously passed away. He was a longtime member of the House, so he got, you know, the funeral and so on. But two personalities were at that funeral, President Bush, George W., and President Barack Obama. And I thought we really saw a contrast of these two men. I mean, John Lewis was not very nice to George W. Bush. In fact, he was pretty nasty toward President Bush. Did not attend his inaugurations, and, you know, I thought it was pretty nasty. But yet President Bush went in there and gave a very eloquent speech, and the type of speech I guess you would expect from an ex-president at a funeral of somebody of the other party. President Obama goes in, and he's talking about George Wallace, the filibuster, and how rotten everything is, and how we're sending troops to squash peaceful protesters. And it was really sick. I think this man is very bitter, Bill. I don't know what else to say, Bill.
I think he is very bitter, and as with what we usually saw with Barack Obama, his ego vastly exceeds his ability. He was not a particularly good president, in my view. I think in the view of a number of other people, he was often weak, often indecisive. Certainly, not anybody America was cheering during his presidency. And the irony is that his presidency is largely forgotten. It really is. I mean, I hear many people complaining about President Trump, but I have yet to hear the first person saying, "Oh, do I wish Barack Obama was still president?" And he seems to feel that President Trump is really no different than Bull Connor, the police chief in Birmingham during the civil rights days. He seems to believe that we are on the brink of mass racism, which is ridiculous. There are more opportunities today for people of color than ever before in America. And yes, he seemed very bitter that his handiwork was being dismantled. And I think that he has bought into the line that Trump is some kind of a threat to democracy, which he very clearly is not. I mean, I don't see where the threat to democracy is. Where is the threat to democracy? You may not like his policies. That's fair. You can criticize the policies. But I certainly don't think he is a threat to democracy.
I don't see any newspapers closing. I mean, they're closing because they don't have any readers. But that's not because of Trump. I mean, that's a more complicated issue. But the newspapers are closing. A lot of media people are losing their jobs. In fact, I heard that 10,000 journalists have lost their job over the last year. But that has nothing to do with Trump. That's other issues that are affecting the news media, Bill.
Well, that's absolutely correct. And in fact, I mean, during the Obama administration, Obama went after reporters.
That's right. I mean,
they really pursued reporters over leaks and things that they think the press was doing wrong. The Obama administration was not unfriendly to dictatorships, especially in the Middle East. You know, when the president of the United States says that Erdogan of Turkey is his closest friend in the Middle East, that should have been a frightening moment. But it was, the press looked the other way, as it always did with Obama. When you realize that Obama's history was that of Marxism and a rather strange and bizarre attachment to certain dictatorships, that should have frightened us, but the press went right along with it. And here he is telling us that President Trump is some sort of a threat to democracy, when in fact President Trump, in many respects, has expanded democracy.
Well, not only that, but he's certainly been, President Trump has been a heck of a lot more transparent with the American news media than Barack Obama ever was. I don't remember Barack Obama doing these impromptu interviews with the press that President Trump seems to be talking to the media just about every day that he gets into the helicopter. He goes here and there. He's always answering their questions, something that President Obama never did. But you remember George Wallace a lot better than I do.
And oh, yes.
For President Trump or President Obama to compare what then-Governor George Wallace was doing to what is happening in Portland or what is happening in other American cities, I mean, it is almost insane. He gets away with it, like you're saying, because the media will not challenge him. But I thought it was insulting to the police officers and the people who are getting rocks thrown at them by these so-called peaceful protesters. I thought it was very unfair to compare them to the people back in 62. I mean, George Wallace was preventing people from going to the university, which is
yes.
a totally different thing, Bill.
Absolutely. George Wallace, who, by the way, changed
That's right.
some of his views toward the later part of his life, was the symbol of the man who stood in the schoolhouse door and prevented black children from coming in during the days when the courts were trying to integrate the schools. And he was he and perhaps a few other Southern governors like Ross Barnett of Mississippi became the symbols of the resistance. There is nobody like that today.
No.
I mean, troops had to be sent into Little Rock by President Eisenhower to escort seven black children into Little Rock Central High School in 1957 because the state of Arkansas would not follow a court order ordering those students to attend that school. I didn't hear anybody claiming that American freedom was under threat, except, of course, the Southern segregationists, which reminds me of something, and that is that some of the people resisting Trump are beginning to sound like Southern segregationists. They even use the same language. The states' rights, our democratic right to rule ourselves as a city, you don't understand our customs, you don't understand the way the people of Portland think. I mean, it is hearing the same language again. And
That's right.
again and again, the local authorities are basically destroying freedom, because when you allow, as in Portland, 60 days of violence to occur, you are destroying the freedom of that city. People forget that in the preamble to the Constitution of the United States, which sets out the reasons for the Constitution, one of the reasons is to preserve domestic tranquility. That you cannot have real freedom with mass rioting going on. And that's exactly what they're claiming that they can do in Portland, that, well, it's only when the federal government moved its troops in, or what somebody called Trump's troops, that the trouble really got bad. That's not true at all. The violence had gotten bad. Excuse me?
That's right. For over 50 days, the violence
yes.
was going on. And, I mean, when you have 59 troops or policemen or federal agents who end up in the hospital, I don't call that a peaceful protest. But another thing, too, that was very obnoxious about President Obama's remarks, he went after the filibuster, and he called it a relic, I think, of Jim Crow, but somehow forgot that when he was a member of the U.S. Senate, he tried to use the filibuster against Sam Alito, the President Bush's nominee for the Supreme Court. And when he was President of the United States, I don't remember him calling Harry Reid and saying, hey, Harry, come on, do away with the filibuster so that those Republicans can put something up for a vote. So, I mean, Obama was so dishonest in what he said that it made me sick, Bill. He must be very bitter, and I think, I'm going to speculate now, but I think he must be anticipating some bad news coming down here in the next few weeks from this Durham report or whatever.
Durham. Yeah.
Because, I mean, look, there could be some things. I don't think he himself will be directly, you never know. But I wouldn't think that a former president would be indicted, or a former vice president. That'll probably be more bureaucrats. But
yes.
we now have enough evidence that, or at least we read, that a lot of crazy things were going on, and some people are going to have to be held accountable, and this is right out of his administration, Bill.
That's exactly right. And for years, the American press has twisted it around to suggest that it was the Trump transition team that was guilty of terrible things. Apparently it was not. They haven't really come up with anything. But I think the Durham report, I mean, the man's been on this report for quite some time. It's inconceivable he's just going to brush through with it and find nothing. It's obvious that he's found plenty, but there are suggestions in some news stories that it was indeed the Obama administration that was engaged in improper activities, basically including spying on the Trump campaign team. And
that's
if
right.
That is true, and if laws were broken, somebody will have to be held accountable. Whether they will be held accountable will depend, of course, on the outcome of this election. If it's a Biden White House, any charges will be dropped, and the press will tragically and sadly support the dropping of those charges. If it is a Trump administration, the Justice Department will be allowed to finish the job. But
yeah.
I think that as far as President Obama is concerned, you know, I find it odd and very disheartening that a man who came to office with such promise and was a trailblazer in terms of eligibility for the presidency, produced not only a mediocre administration, but monetized the presidency more than any man in American history. He has made millions since leaving office in Hollywood. He has bought a house in Massachusetts, which I think was either $15 or $25 million. It's an estate. He bought another estate in Washington, D.C. You know, you would think that if the press were honest, and I have my doubts, that at least one journalist would have come up to him during this period and asked, Mr. President, isn't this a little unseemly for a former president to display such wealth and recent wealth? I would love to hear what Obama's answer is, but they won't ask him the question because he has always been protected by the American press.
Absolutely, and I think this speech at the funeral, you know, everything that he said just went in one ear and out the other. You know, people like me, people like you, we heard it and we were disgusted by it, but unfortunately, a lot of people in the media were not, and that's very sad because he gets away with lots of these things. Bill, during this week, there was a meeting or a hearing in Congress, Dr. Fauci and Representative Jim Jordan, and they were going back and forth about protests. But I think a lot of Americans, myself included, maybe you as well, are very confused with what we're hearing about social distance. I mean, I have no problem wearing a mask and keeping social distance and restricting my activities, you know, to do my part. But I see people who apparently are exempted from that. You see people protesting and not a single Democrat politician says, you know, you really shouldn't protest right now. Maybe it would be better if you held that protest on computer, you know, like a virtual protest or something, because it's not good for you to be out in the street so close to each other. But, you know, here in Houston, the mayor of Houston said, no, the Republicans cannot hold their state convention because we cannot have all of those people in an auditorium. But, you know, he certainly had no problem with thousands of people marching in the George Floyd funeral. So you know, people are confused. They're saying there's like a double standard when it comes to social distance, Bill.
That's right. Well, it's interesting that one of the examples of that was that most churches and other houses of worship have been told that they can't hold funerals during this period, and yet John Lewis got a huge funeral. I mean, it depends on who you are and what you believe. It is really a form of corruption, but you're absolutely right. I mean, I recall one medical center saying during the last month or so that, well, we don't want people out in crowds. However, anti-racism is an important cause, so it's okay in that instance. I mean, if that advice was given by a real medical center, and I don't recall which medical center it was, isn't that a violation of basic medical ethics? Where medical advice is influenced by political opinions, I would imagine it would be, yet not one question was asked. It's right. It's the problem we have with the president. In fact, I was just about, before, when we went on the air, I'm going to continue it after, doing a post on the condition of the press in the United States, which is awful and is the one factor I am really concerned about in terms of this election that's coming up, that the press bias will be so great that President Trump may not be able to overcome it.
Yes, no, the media right now is about as bad as it gets. I mean, I've never seen it like that, and this whole issue of protesting is, you know, or social distance is a good example. I mean, churches, you know, we went to church today, and there's all kinds of restrictions. You have to sit. There's a distance between people. Only 175 people can go to the mass, and you have to walk out of the church, you know, in a straight line. I mean, all kinds of restrictions to keep people 6 feet apart. But yet, if we held a Black Lives Matter protest at our church, nobody would say anything, Bill. We could fill it up. People could be standing right next to each other, and nobody would protest, Bill. There'd be no Democrat politicians saying you shouldn't do that because that's not good for the virus. I'm sorry, but it's an inconsistency there.
Not only an inconsistency, it's an act of corruption. I mean, when the freedoms, after all, when you are told you cannot go to a meeting or that you have to restrict your meeting to 10 people or whatever, that is a restriction on the basic American freedoms of freedom of assembly, freedom of speech. And when it's only applied to certain people, that is particularly outrageous. It's dangerous enough if it's applied evenly, but when it's applied unevenly, as you point out, that is absolutely outrageous. We are really in the process of losing our basic freedoms, and it is remarkable to me how few people are concerned.
Well, maybe there's more people concerned, but they're not saying it, Bill. I don't know because I mean every time I get together with people, they bring it up.
Yes.
I mean they're angry about it, and so maybe people are keeping it to themselves. I don't know, but there is a, you know, when I look at it, I see there seems to be a different standard of social distance, and it depends why you're getting together. If you're getting together to go to church or watch a baseball game or have a graduation party, then all kinds of restrictions. But if you're getting together to march, hey, no problem. Just do it because the ends justify the means, I guess, is what they're saying, Bill.
Well, it is what they're saying, and what they're saying is that the cause of anti-racism is so important that we have to take medical risks for it. Well, if that's important, if we have to take medical risks for it, what about children going back to school where they belong? I mean, you'd think that would be something of importance, but isn't it interesting that in that case, the left is militantly against reopening the schools, and one reason is they get their instructions from the teachers' unions, who apparently don't want to go back to school. And as I understand it, now here is something I'm not sure of, I think that they are actually asking that teachers be paid for doing nothing.
Well, I think that's true. I don't know about every district, but I think that's clearly true in some of the larger city districts, and a lot of the taxpayers are saying, wait a minute, if you're not going to hold class, that's fine, but give me the money so that I can then, you know, give me a refund, if you will, for the taxes I've paid so that I can, you know, then take care of my kids myself. I will tell you one thing, Bill. We're going to take a break, but I will tell you one thing. I think that this, you know, these viruses always have unintended consequences, I guess, these things. I think education, public education, and the teachers' union may look back one day and regret some of the things that they are saying, because there's lots and lots of parents who I think would love to have their money and take care of the kids' education themselves, Bill.
I think so. You know, as soon as that request is made, if people say, for example, we want a reimbursement of our education charges so that we can, for example, hire a tutor to homeschool, you may be certain that in the press the very next day there will appear a number of articles warning about the psychological dangers of homeschooling. I mean, you know, they always seem ready, no matter what the cause.
Right.
I just hope that the American people are seeing through this and will retain President Bush in power, because the opposition is so frightening. It really is. And that opposition may get more frightening this week or the week after with the selection of Joe Biden's candidate for successor. And that is what she's going to be.
That's exactly right. We're going to take a little break, Bill, and then we'll come back. We'll continue our conversation. We're going to talk a little bit about polling data, a little confusing polling data out there. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, as we like to do on Sundays. We're chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Virgin Agenda. Bill, before we get back into the current events, I just had a couple of quick things I wanted to say. Rush Limbaugh, the radio host, celebrated his 32nd anniversary as a national host this week. Obviously, he's not in good health, and you know we wish him the best, but he's got some challenges ahead of him. But anybody who can successfully be on the radio for 32 years and maintain the kind of audience that he maintains, that's remarkable what he does, Bill.
It is. And, of course, he's been cursed for those 32 years by people who believe that the real problem in this country is conservative talk radio. I remember after the terrible bombing in Oklahoma City in, I think it was, is it 90? Well, it was during the Clinton administration.
Yeah, 95.
95, the left in America was trying to blame talk radio for it. It was
right.
Just outrageous. And he is a remarkable broadcaster. I think he is a great stylist. He is wonderful on a microphone, and he has raised very, very important issues. You know, I can understand how the opposition can't stand him. But the fact of the matter is that talk radio is one of the very few spots left in America where the conservative voice is really heard, and his voice has been the loudest of all.
Right. No, and he's very effective at what he does, and that's what I admire him for. I mean, as I say, I don't agree with everything that he says, and I cannot listen to – he's on the air 3 hours a day. I mean, that is amazing in itself that you can do that 3 hours a day.
Oh, yes.
For 32 years, but he's just a tremendous radio host. The other thing that I wanted to bring up quickly is that this is the 30th anniversary, 1990, of the Iraqi invasion of Kuwait, an invasion that really, you know, had a tremendous impact on American foreign policy. You had the Gulf War, then the Iraq War, and it just seems like from 1990 to really almost 15 years, 16 years, Iraq was a major issue in American foreign policy, impacting the Bush administration, the Clinton administration, the second Bush, and then Iraq. And then Obama. It seems like Iraq was a big decision they had to make, Bill.
It was, and it was unexpected. The word Kuwait was not exactly in our vocabulary.
No.
Right before the Gulf War. And President Bush, 41, once Iraq had taken over Kuwait, really, made the decision that that invasion could not be allowed to stand, and it was the United States who led a force to reverse it, and did so in quick order with very fast military action. Now, we should point out that this war was fast. I think the whole thing was 30 days or something.
Yeah.
It was not a great moral cause that Americans rallied round. We weren't defeating fascism. We weren't defeating communism. We weren't truly liberating the country because Kuwait was a monarchy, actually, but a dictatorial monarchy before the invasion, and went right back to being a dictatorial monarchy. So we are left with the idea that the principle of not changing territory by act of force was the one that we were upholding and enforcing, at least for that particular war. But it's interesting that the Gulf War is now largely forgotten. It produced one name, Norman Schwarzkopf, the general, who proceeded to write a book. I think it probably took longer to write the book than to fight the war. And that was it. And it was not a war that goes down in American history as one of the great causes that Americans rallied round. However, it did introduce more Americans to the tyranny of Saddam Hussein as a Middle East leader, and I think it made it easier later on for President Bush 43 to invade Iraq after 9/11. He was never quite successful in linking Iraq to 9/11. However, the atmosphere was right to go into Iraq. The war turned rather bitter afterward. It was a very quick success that we had, but then the war kept going on and on and on and on with guerrilla actions and small unit actions, and I think the public did turn against it at one point.
Yeah, I think so. Eventually it did, and it continued under Obama, who I think made it worse by pulling the troops out early, but that's a whole different issue. But you're right, 30 years... if you would ask anybody what happened 30 years ago, most people wouldn't even remember that Iraq invaded Kuwait. It has faded very quickly from our conversations. Well, let's get back to our current events, Bill. President Trump tweeted something this week. I thought his choice of language was bad, and I think he made a huge mistake by saying postponing or whatever he said. But the basic message is correct, that if you have an election by mail, simply put together 90 days before the election, that's a prescription for disaster, Bill.
Well, you know, this is something that is a hard subject to explain to people, because we are so used to the idea of voting machines and of legitimate absentee ballots. Most Americans really, I don't think, can grasp the idea of an election held almost exclusively with paper ballots again, which is what mail ballots are. They're paper ballots. We thought we got rid of paper ballots. I still remember the days when many states used paper ballots in presidential elections, and it was understood that paper ballots were very susceptible to corruption. The phrase stuffing the ballot box came from that era, where votes would suddenly appear, slips of paper, ballots would suddenly appear in places where they were never stored. And I remember election night 1960, being in Illinois at that time, and Illinois was very close. It was one of the closest states in the union to report in terms of the reporting of votes, and people were asking quite publicly, well, will there be hanky-panky now that the election is so close? People wondered what Mayor Daley of Chicago would do, whether he would certainly find enough votes to give the state to Kennedy. People wondered, on the other hand, what the downstate Republicans would do. They were the ones still using the paper ballots. They were using voting machines in Chicago, but downstate was paper ballots. And we were wondering whether a large number of those ballots would suddenly show up at the last minute. Paper ballots are about the worst way of running an election. Right. They really are.
Well, my feeling, Bill, is that, like, if you came to me and, like, for example, next year, if the state legislature here in Texas next year, let's say that somebody proposes voting by mail, and they go through the legislative process, and they have experts, and they do a test, and they go through different techniques to make sure that it's a clean and honest election, just like the absentee ballots are. I would be open to the idea, but what worries me is what a lot of Democrat states want to do, which is 90 days before the election, they're going to mail every registered voter a ballot. And then, you know, you got people getting ballots. We don't even know if the people live there. We don't even know if they move to another state. There's all kinds of problems here.
Yes.
And in your own state of New York, they're still arguing about a primary, a Democrat primary, where because of mail votes. In Pennsylvania, they've had a lot of trouble. In New Jersey, they've had a lot of trouble. A television station in Chicago did a test with 100
dry
ballots.
Run.
Yeah, and it was a disaster. I mean, they had all kinds of problems. So I'm not against, you know, people say, oh, you're against voting by mail. I said, no, I'm not against voting by mail, but I'm against it this year because we're not ready for it.
That's
you know,
right.
We don't have a system. I mean, here in Texas, we don't. In fact, Texas doesn't even, I mean, the Supreme Court here in Texas said that you cannot do voting by mail. You can do absentee. So if you don't want to go vote, you know, normally, you can vote absentee if you feel that the virus is too risky for you. But that's not what we're talking about. What many of these Democrat leaders are talking about is mailing out, like in California, 30 million ballots. And then, you know, what happens after that? Your guess is as good as mine, Bill.
Well, another thing that we might bring up is apparently these ballots in many of these states are being sent out very, very early. And now I, you know, check me if I'm wrong on this, and you can return them immediately. And that means that we are, in effect, encouraging people to not even look at the campaign, to not even look at the issues. I mean, if you have voting beginning in September, where people are sending in ballots in September, that means that you'll miss most of the campaign and have already made your decision. And there's a reason for the campaign. You know, other countries ridicule us for the length of our political campaigns, but there's a reason for it. And that is many, many campaigns have been decided in the last 2 weeks, as people pay more and more attention to the candidates who are running, not only for president, but down ballot for the Senate, for the House, for governorships. And I think it basically is a means of short-circuiting the electoral process. And for some reason, I wonder why, the Democrats are far more enthusiastic about this than the Republicans.
Well, I don't, you know, as I said, if we had a system in place that we had tried before, that you know, had been tested and so on, I don't see a problem with, you know, people voting in the last couple of weeks or voting by mail or whatever. But I just think what Democrats want to do is really, really manipulate the vote. So President Trump, the idea is correct, Bill, but the way he said it was so sloppy.
Yes, it was.
He opens himself up for this kind of criticism, and it's a shame because I think it's a very legitimate issue. Bill, just another big topic that I wanted to bring up today, and it's what's happening in our cities, what's happening with our police. The police union, I think there's more than one, but one of the major ones is supporting President Trump, and they're even refusing to protect the Democrats at the convention because they feel that the local government is tying their hands. But look what's happening in Chicago, Bill. You wrote an article about this. You know, what's happening everywhere else. The media is not being very honest with what's happening in Portland, Bill. They're not really telling us what's happening there. They're presenting these people as, you know, as they say, peaceful protesters. They're not. And I'm just wondering, when you look at some of this polling data showing that, you know, President Trump is seeing more and more, is being seen more and more as a law and order candidate, I don't know. Maybe there's something happening out there in the country that the Democrats have to worry about, Bill.
Well, I hope there is. I don't know. We've had polls all over the place. As
sure
you
have.
Know, the Rasmussen poll, which some people say is a Republican poll, it does usually result in higher numbers for Republicans, but that's because they poll likely voters, and likely voters are more likely to go Republican. But they had on Friday the president in terms of approval at 50%, where he hasn't been since I think February of this year, and that is enough to win an election. It's also been pointed out that some of the state polls seem to be reducing the Biden lead that had shown up weeks ago, but other state polls show Biden still ahead. It is a very, very hard year to calculate because, first of all, the press is so completely biased, but also the fact that one of the two candidates is campaigning from his basement. And when they let him out of the basement, when somebody comes with the key to give him his breakfast and to let him out for a walk, he comes out and he almost always engages in some gaffe. And
right.
I think that this is the issue, and it's become a big issue, is whether or not Biden will actually be out there campaigning, and indeed whether he will show up for the debates. He might make up a reason. He might say, I'm so outraged by this candidate's behavior, I will not face him in a debate. It's undignified, and get away with it, and the press will cover him. I don't know if Biden can sustain himself through an election. I also find very offensive his whole means of selecting a vice presidential candidate. It must be a woman, and then it must apparently, at least in terms of the candidates, it must be a black woman. That's no way to select a president. And whoever becomes vice president, if he becomes president, will have a very good chance of succeeding him.
Right.
That's no way to do things. I think most Americans feel demeaned by it, but he's getting away with it, and the press will not even challenge him on it.
Well, he's getting away with it because he hasn't named anybody, Bill, I guess. But I think the minute he names one of these ladies, and, you know, there are so many problems with each one of these ladies. I mean,
Susan
Rice could be a real problem if that Durham report comes out. Kamala Harris has her problems. I mean, the sad thing for the Democrats is that there really isn't a Democrat woman right now who really has that much stature. I know that's unfair to say, but I don't see it. I mean, you could see Nikki Haley as a president.
Oh yes,
for example, you could see her as a president. You could see Susan Collins in Maine as a president. But somehow I don't think that this lady in California or the mayor of Atlanta. I think those types of vice presidential choices could actually hurt Biden a lot more, because, like you say, it'll very likely be the next president, Bill.
That's exactly right. Well, he has a choice. Now, apparently the new hot name is Karen Bass, who is the head of the Congressional Black Caucus, which itself disturbs me because she is so factional. I mean, so completely identified with the cause of African Americans, which is fine. By all means, fight the cause of African Americans. But for a president, you want somebody who is broadly appealing, who can step in at any moment and take that 3 o'clock in the morning phone call on foreign and defense policy, which, by the way, isn't even discussed in this campaign. No discussion of foreign policy. And I don't see anyone on that list. We had great hopes for Kamala Harris, that she would emerge from the pack as something a little bit different from the usual candidate. Unfortunately, she didn't. And I fully agree with you. I don't see any names on the list who I would want to step into the presidency.
And maybe that's the reason that it's taking so long, Bill.
It probably is.
Because they're looking at all these names and they're saying, well, yes, she, you know, all kinds of problems.
I think that's true. Well, he should never have committed himself to a candidate from any particular group. That is just, to me, that is beneath the level of the country. It just should not, and it's beneath the level of the office. But we will have that name pretty shortly. We will have very strange political conventions, and we will have a very bizarre campaign. But I am hoping that President Trump can pull off a Harry Truman. You know, it is said that the most vigorous candidate is usually the one who wins. And on that, there can be no contest in this campaign. And if the president can stay out of trouble, he should certainly be aware, I think he is aware, that the press is going to try to get him into trouble. You can be sure that as we speak, the major news organizations of this country are looking for anything they can find on Donald Trump.
That's right. One last thing I wanted to say, Bill, before we go. There was a very interesting poll that came out this week. Emerson, I guess that's a college, but I don't know if the college does the poll, but Emerson poll, they call it. And when they ask people, who are you going to vote for? Biden is ahead 50-46. So that's a pretty close race.
Yeah.
But then when they ask people, who do you think is going to win? President Trump wins 53-47.
Yes.
So that in itself makes no sense, because obviously some people who said they're going to vote for Biden are thinking that Trump is going to win. So it makes me wonder. Maybe I'm crazy, but it makes me wonder if maybe people are not telling pollsters the truth, Bill.
I think that's correct, and I think that may especially be correct in minority communities. Apparently, Trump is showing some real strength in the Hispanic communities, and in the black community, but yet when pollsters go into especially the black community, the numbers aren't that high. But I think that many people of color are very, very frightened to say that they're pro-Trump.
No, and they're also very frightened to live in the cities they're living with the kind of violence
that
we're seeing. I mean, Chicago had another terrible weekend.
Oh, yes.
And that doesn't – I mean, Chicago just doesn't seem to – nothing seems to change. You can almost bet your bottom dollar that there's going to be 10 people killed every weekend. I mean, and 50 shots.
Oh, yes.
I mean, it's like there's no progress on that. Bill, have a great week, and I look forward to next week. Maybe we'll have a VP choice next week. That would be interesting.
Well, it'll either come this week or the week after, and yes, it will be. When you see the white smoke coming out of the Democratic Party chapel, you will know that we have a candidate.
Well, I would be a little concerned about using the white smoke analogy.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
In this age, I deeply
apologize for my insensitivity.
Yes. Yeah, I would be concerned about using that analogy in these difficult times of is it called woke? The woke period.
Woke, yes. I will promise. I will promise to be more woke.
So I think what you should say is when you see the smoke,
yes,
of whatever color it is.
Yes.
It can be multicolored smoke. Though.
That's right. The rainbow smoke.
That's
that
right.
Will
the
come
rainbow
out.
Smoke, and then that way nobody gets confused or offended.
Coming out of the non-denominational chapel.
That's right. That's right. That's right. That's right. That's exactly the best way to say it. Bill, have a great week, and again, thank you for being on the show, and thank you for the great work you do at Urgent Agenda.
Well, thank you, and I look forward to our talk next week.
Thank you so much. Our good friend, Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda, we always enjoy chatting with him on Sundays and doing the weekend review, as we call it, and just going back and forth a little bit on some of the issues of the week. A lot of things going on, and it's just going to get worse. It's going to get more interesting in many ways between now and November. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and good night.